good. Last evening of our practice period, this is our eighth week, which is a long time.
It's night finals.
It's the finals.
Pass out the blue books.
And you will have a chance to demonstrate your knowledge in small groups later on. But in order to prepare you for the finals, Steve and I are going to do a summary of what we think we've covered.
A review.
We're doing a review.
I thought you were going to say song. I got really excited.
That would be good. I actually have a little bit from Alice in Wonderland later on, which is pretty congruent with the Seven Dwarfs. Okay. So Steve and I are going to do a bit of a summary, and then as we've done for the last 7 weeks, we're going to divide into small groups and talk to each other, and then we're going to come back and chant the refuges. We chanted the refuges at the beginning of our practice period. It seemed like a nice bookend to finish up with. So a practice period is our chance, or a chance, to deepen our practice in some way, to deepen our commitment to the unfolding of the Dharma. It's been a chance to practice with intention, both on the cushion and off the cushion, and apparently with cookies. Which was Karen's intention. And these ideas to practice on and off the cushion and to practice with intention have infused all of our talks and I think all of our discussions together in the last couple months. Because ultimately, everything we do is practice. We're practicing something all the time. So if we practice concentration, we're practicing steadiness of mind. If we're chronically complaining, we're practicing anger and ill will. If we are constantly distracted, we're practicing distraction and scattered mind. If we're practicing and committed to loving kindness or unconditional friendliness, we're cultivating peace and calm. You get the idea. So our practice period has been a chance to look at some factors of the mind which can disturb the mind, can muddy the mind. And those factors are the five hindrances, which are a very significant part of Buddhist study and practice. So we call this period gladdening the heart, freeing the mind from the hindrances, because we called it that because not only did we want to identify a topic, the hindrances, but we really wanted to look continuously at the cultivation of a certain spirit. And that spirit would be the practice of contentment, the practice of gladdening. And so we hope, for a lot of us, the practice period has been focused on a topic but within a certain spirit, which we hope to continue. So, just as a reminder, why did we pick the hindrances? Because there's lots of lists in Buddhism, and there's lots of threes and fours and sixes and sevens. Five seem like a nice number. That's not why we did it. We did it because the hindrances are grumpy, sneezy,
sleepy.
I think sneezy is like restlessness myself. But anyhow, no, the five hindrances in Buddhism are sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt or uncertainty. So why did we choose to focus on those for 2 months? Because many reasons. One, they're frequent visitors. These are common mind states. So it's not like, wow, would anything come up in 2 months that would be on the topic? Something probably came up on the topic. These visitors, these mind states, cause suffering. So engaging with these visitors and exploring the attitude that we have with these visitors seem like a really good focus for practice together. We chose to study these mind states because they take us out of the present moment. They lead to preoccupation. Our mind becomes preoccupied with the story that goes with that mind state, or perhaps the planning. What are we going to do about that mind state? And all of those reactions take us out of the present moment, which is the sort of place we would like to be as much as possible. The hindrances color our perceptions, so they change our analysis of the situation, and they change our view. And out of that, out of those perceptions, comes our actions. And so our actions are often unskillful, cause suffering to self or others, and are not based on an accurate assessment of the situation. So to be able to step back and really analyze, to really understand the hindrances, is to give us a better chance of acting in a way that will bring ourselves and others happiness. So we talked a lot the first night about intention, and we've talked a lot about intention in these 2 months. So intention is knowing what you want to do and why you want to do it. And it includes understanding not only what you want to do, but how that might happen, what you want to cultivate in order to move in that direction. So right intentions at their core are the intentions to practice generosity, renunciation, non-ill will, unconditional friendliness, clear seeing, and compassion. So here's a bit of dialogue about intention and what happens when there isn't clear intention. This is from Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass. "Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?" asked Alice. "That depends a good deal on where you want to get to," said the Cheshire Cat. "I don't much care where," said Alice. "Then it doesn't matter which way you go," said the Cat. "Oh, so long as I get somewhere," Alice added as an explanation. "Oh, you're sure to do that," said the Cat, "if you only walk long enough." So it's, I think, obvious that action doesn't always stem from clear intention, and we have a better chance of getting where we want to go if we know where we want to go. Okay. So after thinking about intention, John and Mary gave us a framework which is called the gradual training, which is a significant series of discourses, and it forms the foundation for working with the hindrances. So the gradual training is a description of the practices that lead to insight and awakening. And basically what the gradual training tells us is that there are things we can do in our lives that make working with the hindrances much easier. And so John and Mary handed out this lovely table, which might be available on our website at some point. Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. So it looked like this. Good handout. But one of the things that it's very clear in the gradual training is that paying attention to the precepts, paying attention to our actions, paying attention to intention, paying attention to what is going on, all these things help us lead a life in which we're less muddied, we're less clouded, and the hindrances are less likely to arise. So there's definitely a moral foundation to this practice, and the gradual training helps us see that. So Steve, I think, is going to talk about that in a little more detail in the multimedia section of our presentation tonight.
That's it. I remember how to turn this thing up.
It's right under. Yeah.
So as we were,
As we
were preparing for this, we got together and John gave us, he had given this a lot of thought and gave us several pages of notes, and that's really the source for almost all of this. I just kind of put it on some slides. So as Gene said, the reason we made, there's the question of why we made the hindrances the subject of this 8-week practice period that we put together. And we meditate for however long we do, maybe just once a week when we come here, or maybe you have a daily practice and you might meditate up to maybe a couple hours a day. But still, fairly small fraction of your life. And as the reading that I did after the meditation said, the meditation is really just setting up conditions to meditate, to minimize the hindrances. So we kind of shut off sensory input so that we can kind of practice and build up a little bit of clarity and mindfulness and concentration. And it's the rest of the time when we come into contact with the world when the hindrances really show up a lot bigger. And that's when our skill with them is tested. So we're really working to reshape some of the default habitual patterns of the mind that cause those hindrances to hinder. So the first two types of knowledge shown up here, knowing when a hindrance is present in the mind and when it's absent, those come from the mindful observation that we develop within our meditation, the moment-to-moment. Watching the mind lets us know and start recognizing, here's a hindrance. Here's restlessness. Here's some sense desire. So that's where we start bringing the skills we've built in meditation into our lives off the cushion. And unless we can know a hindrance is present, we can't begin to do anything about it. And the second one is equally important, really, knowing when it's absent from the mind, knowing when we're momentarily free of hindrances. And we can enjoy that, the freedom and peace in that, and that really kind of can help motivate us to try to get more of that and try to make that our new habit. The next in the list is knowing what causes it. So knowing there's a causal chain that the Buddha laid out in one of his suttas here. And it kind of goes through this causes this causes this, and you have it here. And it's interesting that the top of the chain, the first thing, is not associating with superior persons. With people that understand the Dharma and practice it. So that's kind of the first step in this chain. And then from that, you're not listening to the true Dharma. Leads to lack of faith, leads to the careless attention, leads to lack of mindfulness and clear knowing, leads to not guarding the sense doors, to unwholesome conduct in body and speech and mind. And then you get the arising of the five hindrances. So when you have this moment of anger, there's a lot of stuff behind it, a lot of causes that get before that momentary anger builds up. So it's not just somebody cutting you off in traffic, but all the conditioning that makes you respond the way you do. Okay, so, and in this list, the first two links are about how we set up some of the conditions of our lives. Right? We associate with good people. We do our training. Try to get ourselves started in the right way. And then there are a few steps about intention and attention, like Jean was talking about. Lack of faith, careless attention, lack of mindfulness and clear knowing. And then you start getting into the negative effects. So probably we could have turned this around and made it more positive, because there would be a corresponding list that would take you from associating with good people, listening to the Dhamma, having faith, careful attention. So that kind of builds you up in a positive direction. This is kind of the negative side. And then the last two steps of this slide that we looked at earlier, once you know that the hindrance is present or absent, know what causes it, then you're ready to remove or prevent it. And for each hindrance that we've looked at during this practice period, we've been looking at lists of how to remove them and prevent them. So I think that's part of what's on there. There's tables all over the place, and in fact, that's what I was going to do instead of this, was present another table. So again, from the previous list, we looked again, and Karen asked about the superior persons, and there's a quote from the Buddha: with regard to external factors, none is more important for the training of a monk than noble friendship. That's why it's at the top of the list. You have people that support you in your growth, and that's the first step in getting free. In preventing and removing, it's really a matter of right effort. So right effort is one of the steps in the Eightfold Path of the Buddha, and this lets you see the impact of the hindrance, understand that it's a problem, be motivated to abandon it. And then there are in terms of how to get rid of them, there's the gradual path that we talked about and we'll probably be mentioning again, which is a step-by-step instruction guide for careful attention to prevent hindrances. There's directing attention to more skillful objects. Again, we see again and again the importance of how we use our attention. So there's really skill and discernment required in this. And it's the last point here, it's more than bare attention. It really takes some active skill and effort. So in all five types of the knowing slide that we looked at before, knowing how to recognize when it's present and absent, the cause, and the prevention and removal, how to use attention has really been a key. And there are different teachers use different adjectives to modify the attention. Some call it wise attention, some appropriate attention, some careful attention. But there is an active, effortful, right effort quality to the attention. There are three steps in the Eightfold Path that really associate with this careful attention. The first is right view, which informs how you how the attention is going to be applied. There's right effort motivates and kind of it's the engine of the right effort of the careful attention, and it's maintained by right mindfulness. So when it comes to the hindrances, it isn't just open awareness or what is called bare attention, but a more focused and directed attention that is needed. And you need careful attention to the Four Noble Truths, which lets us know clinging, how suffering, dukkha arise and how those things give rise to the hindrances. And then the Eightfold Path and the gradual training give techniques and practices to develop and use in overcoming them. So there's a real skill in framing the questions that we ask correctly. So it's a matter of attending to life events with skill, asking not how am I feeling right now, but noticing there is a feeling and what is it, and being investigating how that is, and not asking the philosophical question, is there a self, but looking at the feelings, the thoughts, the perceptions, the body, and seeing, asking the question, is there a self associated with any of those people, with those it's all leading to the experience of the three characteristics of things that are not permanent, not satisfying, and not self. Anicca, dukkha, and anatta.